All right, so basically what I want to deal with is, I understand I never gave the shiur on the chalomos over here, somebody told me. I don't remember if I did or I didn't, but anyways, I'd like to incorporate that shiur, and like I said, we'll get started this week, but may not finish. Okay. The thing is like this, that there really are two problems that I'd like to deal with. One problem, of course, is the general problem that everybody, notices in the parsha, and that is that how could the Shiftei Kor do such a horrible, atrocious deed? That's the that's one question. I mean, with Yosef, all right. That's one question, and the second question is the idea of chalomos. I'd like to go through what the idea of chalomos are in Yahadus. What does a dream mean in Yahadus? You can't just sidestep this because it's an important area. You see, it comes up frequently. And the question is, what is our attitude towards dreams? Is our attitude towards dreams a mystical one? Is it is our attitude towards dreams like the psychoanalysts look at dreams? I mean, what exactly is opposition? Opposition doesn't seem to fit into these other positions. I mean, we have to go into exactly why and how and what our concept of a dream really is. In Yahadus, what does Yahadus hold dreams? Because Yahadus does deal with it. Okay? And when you go into it, you see, first of all, you're struck with a big problem. And that is that one thing you see in Yahadus is that the idea of a dream comes under two headings that would seem to be mutually exclusive. On the one hand, the dream represents shiflus Adam, the lowest part of man, the animalistic and the instinctual part of man, like the Gemara quotes in Brachos, where from the Pasuk in Daniel Beis. Okay, so Daniel said, V'rayone levov ant malka Rayoncho al mishkovcha sliku. All right, that your thoughts, the thoughts that you've had in your mind in the daytime, in other words, your instinctual thoughts, or your desire, basically, Rashi explains it here, your desire for power, really, that which you were thinking about in the daytime, I mean, those ruminating about, those thoughts are really what are what motivated this dream, okay? So on the one hand, dreams are really the lowest part of man, shiflus Adam. On the other hand, the Torah seems to think dreams are the area of the highest godless Adam, okay? The Pasuk says, b'chalom adababa. Okay, so chalom and nevuah is the highest level of man. How could it be that the same area, the area of dreams, has two opposites? On the one hand, it's the lowest part of man. On the other hand, it's the highest part of man. I mean, that's one thing you could see. If you look at Yahadus, definitely characterizes it that way. That dreams are really not a simple thing to understand. And Yahadus immediately sets out to say that dreams involve two mutually exclusive areas of man. One is the lowest, the instinctual part of man, which is the lowest part of his makeup. And on the other hand, dreams also involve the highest part of man, b'chalom adabar b'nevuah, which is the highest level that a person can reach. Okay, so that itself, I mean, is something which makes a person realize that there's something very deep over here. I mean, it's not a singular attitude that Yahadus has towards dreams. I mean, primitive people have a singular attitude towards dreams. It fits into a compartment in their mind. There's no contradiction or conflict. But in Yahadus, you see, that you can't just take dreams and fit them into a compartment. On the one hand, they reflect the highest part of man. On the other hand, the lowest part of man. Strange thing. And really, the Gemara points it out. The Gemara says, In Brachos, the area that deals with dreams, Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis, so the Gemara says that Shmuel ki avichozi chalma bisha, when he saw a bad dream, Omar, he said, he quoted a pasuk from Zechariah, v'chalomos hashov yedaberu, and it's talking about the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah are liars, and their prophecies are lies, and the Chalomos Hashov Yidaberu. Chalomos Hashov, nonsense, absolute nonsense. So that's as Chaya says. So Shmuel, when he had, so it's like people say today, you're only dreaming. This is nonsense. So when he had a bad dream, so he quoted the pasuk from Zechariah, Chalomos Hashov Yidaberu. Okay, that the Chalomos are nonsense, absolute shtus. Ki avachozi chelmotavo, when he saw a good dream, Omar, he said, v'chi ha-chalomos ha-shov yidaberu. Can this be that it's just a nonsensical dream? V'aksiv, the pasuk says, b'chalom ha-dabar bo. All right? You see, why didn't he just say, b'chalom ha-dabar? Because he wanted to show. See, the way he's expressing the same idea that we're saying. That in Chalamos and Yahadis, in Torah Shebichsav, and of course in Torah Shebalpeh, but even in Torah Shebichsav, I mean, without too much Torah Shebalpeh, you can see clearly that the idea of a dream is a dream involves two spheres, and they're really mutually exclusive. One is Chalamos Hashav, Shtus Vehevel, total nonsense, and on the other hand, Bachaloma Dabrabo, it's the highest level of human existence, the perception of Nevoah. Yeah. Case where people did solve intellectual problems in dreams, rare cases. I'm not saying it's impossible. Basically, it's usually, I mean, it usually doesn't happen. I mean, that's you have Machlekes Achrenu, one Achren said he had the answer in a dream. And the other one said that it was really Divrei Chalemes. So
with the low interpretation.
Yehadis never really gave too much credence to dreams. It's interesting. On the one hand, Yehadis really, I would say from learning the Gemaras and Brachas, that one of the things that Chazal tried to do. One of the things that Chazal tried to do was to teach the Hamon Am, not to be afraid of dreams. That's one of the things that Chazal learned through the Gemaras and Brachos. You see, one of the things that Chazal tried to do was to teach the Hamon Am not to be afraid of dreams. Okay, what? Tainus Chalom, we'll get to. What Tainus Chalom is? On the contrary, Tainus Chalom is a rational way of dealing with dreams. But you see that Chazal, one of the things that Chazal tried to do, if you study Brachas, is to teach the Hamona not to be afraid of dreams. That was a very important thing. Because a person, they did recognize that a person could have a morbid fear of dreams, and that this fear itself can be the worst thing and can destroy their lives. That's one thing Chazal showed. But that's why they tried to caution people not to fear dreams. But at any rate, but that's insofar as the Hamon Am is concerned. But insofar as Torah, the Torah itself is concerned, this you definitely see this dilemma that on the one hand the dream is shtus v'hevel. What is it? Chalamos Hashov Yedaberu. It's a Shmuel saw a good dream. He would say it's on the contrary. Chalamos Dabbo. But he saw a bad dream, Chalomos HaShav Yidaberu. Stupid. Dreams are stupid. On the other hand, dreams reflect the highest level of man, and that's why when he saw a good dream, V'chi Chalomos HaShav Yidaberu. V'chalom HaDabarbo. V'chalom HaDabarbo. That is an amazing thing, that Yehadis looks at dreams in a dual manner. Okay, in a dual manner. It's two things. Why? How is that possible? It's completely opposite. Those are the primitive people look at dreams simply in a very simple, straightforward, they have a compartment for what dreams are, and there's no contradiction, there's no conflict. And Yehadis, it embraces two different areas of man, the lowest part of man and the highest part of man. Okay. When we say a bad dream and a good dream, essentially what we mean, the affect in the person after the dream. The affect in the person. Does the person wake up with a good feeling, and usually that means that the elements in the dream were favorable, good things, favorable, and bad is where the person wakes up and he's distraught. I mean, he's fraught with terror and fear. I mean, that's a bad thing. The affect is really what determines. Of course, the affect is related to the content, at least in a superficial way. Okay?
Yeah.
But the fact that the Torah never took dreams seriously, completely, I mean, with the exclusion of, like I said, the Bachalama Darabab, let's just speak about one side, that certainly Yahadus never really... Well, let me put it this way. Yahadus never really had a respect for dreams, or a fear, or an awe, or a mystical kind of attitude towards dreams, that dreams are something you can't tamper with. You have to sort of, I mean, like the primitive people, a dream is a powerful force. I mean, it's a force. It's a mystical force of fate, which one must, so to speak, prostrate themselves before. I mean, this is something you don't tamper with, is that it's a power. The fact that that Yahadus never looked at it that way is open psukim in the Torah. Because, you see, when Yosef HaTzadik came with his dreams, so the brothers, the Shiftei Kor, the brothers who knew very well, can't know it any better, the Shittas of Yahadus, what did they say? They weren't impressed. They weren't impressed at all. So they were not impressed with dreams. The fact that he had these dreams didn't mean anything to them. They weren't afraid of it. And they thought of the contrary. That what does it express? It's simply an expression of his own egomania and his own desire. Immediately when he told them the dream, what did they tell him? What did they answer him? They didn't say he didn't have the dream. They didn't have a dream. They said, "Hamolech Timlech Aleinu, Marshal Timshal Bono." Don't you see what this dream is? What are you saying? I mean, you're saying basically that you have these fantasies and these illusions, and you're going to have power over us, both intellectually and physically, you have a desire for power. Basically, it says very simple. What are you getting so excited about? This, on the contrary, shows the evil part of your nature. So they reprimanded him. They were not. They never for a moment thought maybe this is something really, some mystical power. They immediately dismissed it. And even Yaakov Avinu, Vayigar bo aviv, Vayomalo, Moa chalom aser asher chalomto. So you see, he criticized him because he never thought, Yahadus never really gave dreams some kind of supernatural power, and then when you hear a dream, you must be frightened about it. But you see, open circle in the Torah. You don't have to go any further. Yes, it's true that we have to understand, because that's the other sign. Bachaloma dabarbo. There is, in other words, what I'm saying is as follows: that our attitude, Yahadus' attitude towards dreams, has nothing to do with the mystical, because the mystical doesn't. The mystical is a certain respect for dreams. We don't have respect for dreams, okay? But we do maintain somehow, and that's what we have to clarify, that somehow in the dream there is, you can't just dismiss the dream completely like psychoanalysts do. If our position was completely like the psychoanalysts, then you wouldn't have the story of Yosef and the Chaloros, and you wouldn't have the Chalom Paro. And you wouldn't have a pasuk b'chalom adabarbo. Okay, not that these three are exactly the same. You have to see exactly how it works. But what I'm just saying is that the Torah definitely dismisses a mystical attitude towards dreams. That you can forget about. Is there something? Can there be something in a dream of truth? That's a different question. Essentially, I would say the difference between our understanding of dreams and the primitive understanding is like we're saying, that in the primitive understanding, the dreams are a force, and it's a force of destiny, it's a power and a force that must be, it's a frightening type of thing, and it must be dealt with. It must be neutralized, or else the person is in tremendous danger. That's the attitude of the primitive attitude. But in Yahadus, it's a completely different attitude. I would say the Chazal, which gives you the best definition of how we look at dreams, is where Chazal say that every dream, the Gemara Bracha says, a dream that's not interpreted is like a letter that's not read. What does it mean? It means to say, what is a letter? A letter is simply a description of phenomena. Okay, so it means if you don't, it means a dream is nothing more than, no different than any other kind of phenomena. Just like a person must understand phenomena, other phenomena, he must understand the dream. Which essentially means that a dream is an object of study and analysis and investigation. That's basically what Yahadus holds. It's not something you dismiss as total nonsense, okay, and it's not something that you fear in a mystical way. But it's something which the mind can apply itself to and reap benefits from. That's our attitude. That's Yahadus attitude. And that's basically what Yosef did with Paro. That's what Yosef did with Paro. Yosef showed Paro that the dream, basically what he said was, the Chatumim said that certain things are going to happen to him that he can't control. That's the mystical interpretation. Certain things are happening that he can't control. Yosef showed Paro, no. On the contrary, there are certain things that are going to happen, but it's under your control. If you use your chachma now that you know what the dream means, he said, so va'ata yere paro ish novam v'chacham v'shiseo al eretz mitzrayim. It's up to you. It's up to your bechira now. Now that you studied, you have the phenomena, now it's up to your bechira. Either you could be intelligent and use your chachma and make this into the greatest success, or else if you don't, it's going to be the greatest tragedy. But whether it's going to be a tragedy, whether it's going to be success, it's completely dependent on your chachma. That's basically what Yosef taught Paro. That was something completely different than the Chatumim. Because the Chatumim told him things that he couldn't control. That he's that certain tragedies are going to befall him, or certain good things are going to befall him. It wasn't something that was under his control. Yes. Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to the Ofen Mashke. I would say it's an interesting thing. By the Chalom Paro, take the Chalom Paro first, then we'll go back, work our way back. Okay, because we have to go through all the cases of the Chalomos. All the cases of the Chalomos, including Chalom Yosef, really. Chalom Yosef. Chalom Yosef and Chalom Paro are two different types of Chalomos, really. Okay, we'll see. But the, yeah, okay, no, I'm not doing it for a moment. But anyways, what I want to say is like this, that if you take a look, you see, just to get some insight into the Chalomos, why is it that when the Chatumim explain the dreams to Paro and Miketz, okay, that's this week's Parsha, right? So he wasn't happy. You see, he wasn't happy. Right? Okay. And basically, you see the way the Torah uses that extra word, okay, lifaro, it shows you clearly that the way the Chatumim was successful in being poser was based on the subjective response of the person who had the dream. That was lifaro. It means to say that's a Rashi. It's Chazal saying they were poser, but not Lefaro. He wasn't satisfied with it. So let's just try to understand what their method was, okay, and why they failed in this case. All right? What was the method of the interpretation of the Chatum? How would they... They looked at a dream as a mystical force, a mystical forecasting of either some tragedy, terrible thing, or else something very good. One of the two. And they were very skillful. Apparently, these Chatumim for years were successful in explaining Paro's dreams. All of a sudden, they came up on this one. They couldn't explain it. I mean, why couldn't they? Why was their interpretation really not satisfactory to Paro? It wasn't because of what Yosef introduced, that a halom. So he taught Paro a whole idea. Halom is an object of study and investigation and analysis, and once you analyze it, you can gain certain information, and then you have to use that information. A whole different type of philosophy about halomos. That wasn't what was defective over here, because they never heard of such a thing. That's when Paro said, never heard of such things. He's amazed at a whole different approach here. Okay? But that wasn't why he was dissatisfied with the Chatumim, because he never saw this approach before anyways. Okay? But you see, the way the Chatumim work, is that dreams which come from the unconscious mind, in dreams, what is used in portrayal in dreams is a disguised kind of symbolic language. Okay, without going through, an analysis of every type of dream and what various symbols mean, but just generally speaking, dreams are something that are disguised. Okay, it's a disguise of the person's inner strivings, instinctual wants and desires, and it's expressed in a certain symbolic manner. Okay, now the way the Chatumim, the reason why the Chatumim was successful was because they were very adept at that. In other words, there's some people that have a great intuition in that area. They can interpret symbols. It's just an ability. Some people are closer to that unconscious part of the mind than other people. So therefore, they're more adept at it. But just like you see people, some people have great imagination, some people have no imagination. I mean, it's a certain kind of natural gift. Okay, the Chatumim were intelligent people who were intelligent, and they also, that's called Chachamel, they were intelligent, and they also were very gifted in this area. You see, they were very gifted in this area, that they could interpret the symbols of the dream. They're very good at interpreting the symbols. And once they, if they hit the right symbolic interpretation, so the dreamer sensed a certain relief. Because what happened was the disguise, the veil was torn, so to speak, and they could sense, yes, that's right, that's exactly what it is. You see, that was the method of interpretation. So they weren't stupid people. I mean, people think that and the people of the past were stupid. They weren't stupid. They were intelligent people, and when the interpretation really hit upon something, and it struck the inner personality, and it tore the veil, so to speak, of the disguise, was broken down somewhat, and not necessarily completely, but however much it was, the dreamer could sense that you're right. That's it. That's what it was, and they gained satisfaction. Now, Paro's dream, really, when you take a look at Paro's dream, there was a problem, really. And there were two, in my opinion, there were two problems with Paro's dream that prevented the Chatumim from really being able to interpret it. One problem was, you see, what did he see? He saw from the Yor. Vinei Omed al Hayor. So this we mentioned once before, that Paro basically was a megalomaniac. I mean, he thought he was a god. I mean, this is a fact. The word Paro wasn't his name, but Paro was the name for the king. Well, he was a deity. He was a deity. Vinei Omed al Hayor. I mean, so the Yor really, but the Yor was really the major deity, because that was where everything that Egypt had came from the Yor. And that's why Egypt was so unique and so successful, because of the Yor. They were able to go up and down the Yor because of the way the wind blew and the way the river flowed in the opposite direction. And this Yor, it overflowed, and the fertility of the land, and everything was the Yor. They even had, as a matter of fact, they even had plumbing in those days because of the Yor. Because what happened was that when the Yor would overflow, they'd catch the water, and then they had plumbing. And they had their bathrooms, toilets, plumbing, because they catch it up on top and then they use it and go back into the Yor. And then to let it overflow again. So really the economy of Egypt, everything was really dependent on the Yor. And since they were mystical, so the Yor had a power. The Yor was what was really a god. But Paro identified himself with that god. And he wouldn't say, Paro couldn't say that he is... the only god. I mean, he held the Or was the major god, but he was related to the Or in a certain way, that he also was a part of this whole combination of deity. Okay, so that's why when the dream opens up, Vinei Omer El Hayor, this was an expression of Paro. I mean, in his the height of his megalomania. Okay? And then what happens is, from the or, so Sheva Poros, Yefos Marov, Rios Bosor, emerge. And that was wonderful. That was perfect. That was very satisfying, because that's exactly what it means. The or is the deity. He's on top, and he's standing there, and Omid Aleor is on top of the or, and it's producing exactly what he wants, the Poros Yefos. Okay? But then something, the dream takes a turn. Now what happens is a second group of Poros emerge from the Or, Ros Marev Dagos Bosar, just the opposite, sickly looking. It's something which evokes in a person a certain emotional response, you know, of horror, like something bad, horrible. V'atamod no eitzel haporos v'asfase Or, okay. But then Vatochalno Aporos Ros Hamareva Dakos Abosor is Sheva Aporos Yifos Hamareva Brios. Then the tragedy takes place. The tragedy is the ones that are disgusting, I mean, unappealing, and that give a person a sickly kind of feeling, these consume the good ones, and that's the end of the dream. That's the end of the dream. So that's the tragedy, the horror. Is the dream culminates in a symbolic tragedy. Okay? So that's why it says he awoke. He awoke. Vayikatz Paro. Okay? And he was very disturbed. Very disturbed. Then he goes to sleep, and he has another dream with the Shibolim. Similar, same kind of thing, but this time it's the Shibolim instead of the Paros. Okay. Now, what did they say? Well, how did the Chartumim interpret? How did the Chartum had a problem over here. See, the Chartum had a problem. You have to understand also that if you're in the business of being one of the Chartumim, you always want to, you hope, I mean, somehow or other, to interpret the dream in a way that you're going to find some kind of favor in the eyes of Paro. You understand? I mean, It's a natural thing. You're in a position. That's what you're there for. You're really there to help Paro out. You're not there to tell him he's doomed and this is the end of his reign and he's doomed to tragedy. That's not something you want to tell Paro. Okay. So even if your prediction would be accurate, it really wouldn't help you any. You see, you wouldn't be in a position to reap the benefits of such and such a prediction. So the Chartumim's purpose really was to tell him certain things and perhaps prepare him emotionally, you see, and get him set, I mean, to be able to accept and deal with certain things, but not to predict total doom. So the problem with the dream was like this, that in this dream, you have a serious difficulty. The difficulty is that the dream is an expression of his megalomania, and its total destruction. So what did the Chartumim do? So Chazal say, the Chartumim said that the Poros was Sheva Bonos Yolid, and then we'll lose the Sheva Bonos. So what did they do? So they threw it into the realm of a personal tragedy. They said, this dream reflects a personal, private tragedy. So he wasn't satisfied. Why wasn't he satisfied? Because to Paro, personal life does not have the significance that it has for an ordinary individual. For him, his emotions are really invested in a much broader, bigger scope. This is Paro, the world ruler. Sheva Bonos Yolid, Sheva Bonos Yikover is not essential. I mean, it's bad, but it's not essential. So the Chartumim really could not explain the dream because they were caught, you see. If they would explain it in an essential, in the area where he really sensed symbolically that it is, namely in terms of his own megalomania and his own power, world power, that he considered himself to be, so then it spells out doom. So they slipped it to the side, sort of. They said it's important, but it's part of your personal life. Okay, and the Poros are Sheva Bonos. But that didn't satisfy him because he knew that that's not really where the emotion of the dream was. The emotion of the dream was tied to him being a superpower. It was not tied to some tragedy, a personal tragedy. That in Paro's mind was not such a significant thing. It was bad to be ready for fine, but he sensed this is wrong. There's another reason why I think he didn't accept the interpretation of the Chatan. And that is, you see, in symbolic interpretation, the object you have to have a certain feeling for an object that this is a proper symbol. You see. Now, the Paros were very good to be objects of daughters. It fits in perfectly. It's very good. So on that score, in that sense, they scored. I mean, on that, they no doubt Paro thought that's a good idea. The Paros are daughters. The only problem is he had another dream. And the second dream was the Shibboleth. You see? So he didn't believe it was an individual event. You see that it was daughters. Because if it were only that, then there would be no purpose for the second dream and the Shibboleth. And the Shibboleth doesn't have the same symbolic significance as the Paros. So then he saw it's something universal. There's something universal there. And that's why he wasn't satisfied with the object that they described, you see, with the interpretation that they gave him, saying that the Paros stood for the daughters. So they were caught really with two. The problem was, and that's why it was that way. Of course, the dream was really a false Hashgacha. Was from Hashgacha. There's no question about that. It was a dream that was part of the Hashgacha. But the way the Hashgacha worked out the dream was in a way that it was impossible. I mean, it was true also, but it turned out that it was impossible. It was impossible to interpret the dream in the usual manner. In other words, the usual tools had to fail over here. There's no way they can get over this difficulty. So Yosef, of course, got over both difficulties. Why? Because Yosef showed him that it has to do with his megalomania, with him being the most powerful force in the world. It did have to do with that. And also it showed him that it wasn't a tragedy. Amazing. Because it showed him that it's true. You know, this is you, the most powerful force in the world. And it's a tragedy because the Sheva Shonim rose. But, the fact is, it's under your control. You can make it into the greatest success ever. Because everybody knows the basic law in economics of supply and demand. So therefore, if you utilize it properly, these bad years will make you the most powerful force, more powerful than ever. So he was totally satisfied, because he knew in terms of the interpretation of the dream that it was forecasting tragedy in his very essence, where his essence lies, namely in his greed and his power, you see. He knew that, and Yosef's interpretation satisfied that. But on the other hand, Yosef did not say he's doomed, because he taught him that a dream is something which is like everything else, no different than everything else, and the main thing is to approach it with chokhmah and to understand it, and it doesn't doom you, it's not a force, but if you use chokhmah, you can take that information, and you could use it on the contrary to even improve, take a disaster and take disaster and convert it into a tremendous success, as long as you use chokhmah. That's basically what Yosef. Yosef's interpretation was just perfect. Could not be better. Couldn't be better. I don't believe that the reason that Paro really was so impressed with Yosef's interpretation was because of the fact that he taught him new ideas about dreams. No doubt, he was very moved by that. And he saw a whole new intellectual approach. But I would venture to say the main thing that made him happy was that clicked in his emotions was the fact that he knew it was right, symbolically. The interpretation was right, he felt it. And also, it satisfied his need that it should not be a disaster, you see. Then he was very prompt to hear new ideas. You see, take care of the problems, new ideas, very nice. But, and no doubt he was impressed, for a while anyways. But the emotional impact was the main thing in winning over Paro. It wasn't that he won him over with Chachma. The Chachma was there, and of course he respected the Chachma. He wasn't stupid. He respected the Chachma, but the main reason, the framework that made him really accept the Chachma and revere the Chachma and say, Novon v'chacham kamocha. Suddenly, before he has all these chatumim, you know, these chatumim tell all kinds of mystical things, and suddenly he's involved in Novon v'chacham, Novon v'chacham kamocha, like the Torah says in the same exact expression that the Torah uses in Dvarim, and when the nations will see the chachmas Torah, what will they say? Rakam chacham v'novon agoya gadol azeh. Okay, exact same expression. Suddenly he's converted to an appreciator of chachma. The sudden conversion was no doubt due to the fact that it fit in precisely into his emotions as well. I'm not saying he didn't really recognize it, but people are not simple. The recognition was based on the fact that essentially he was satisfied in his major quest, which was his desire for power and to satisfy his whole all of his emotional needs. And then he did respect the Chachma. Yes, he did, but it was only based on that, with that backdrop. Yes. Well, Yosef credited his understanding to God when he said, Biladai, Elokim Yanesh Shlom Paro. So what it means is that the Chachma is not mine. The Chachma is not mine. What does it mean the Chachma is not his? I mean, he wasn't stupid. Yosef was... It says on the contrary, Ramban says that when it was in the Mishmah with these guys, these were top people in the country. And just to approach them, you'd be afraid to approach them. Who are you? But it says, Botach b'chachmasa, that he was very secure in his knowledge, and he had a security that stemmed, was based upon knowledge. It's a different kind of security. So he had that security, and that's how he was able to approach them. So you see that he considered himself a great chacham. What is Biladai, or Lakim Yanesh Shlom Paro? What he meant was like this. What he meant was he showed him that, you see, we hold, and it's a funny thing, Daniel said the same thing to Amalek. He said, it's not from me, the Chachma. What it means is that we have our idea of a Chacham is not simply brain power. Not simply IQ. Because you could be the most intelligent person and you could miss a major point. I mean, there are people who have very, very high IQ, spend their lives, just wasting their lives, basically. But Chachma is more. That's why Chazal say, in the same Gemara there, that God gives Chachma to the Chachamim. And what does it mean, Chachma to the Chachamim? It means to say that Chachma is based upon, of course you need intelligence, without intelligence you can't function, but it really involves the drive and the desire of the individual, and then the fact that the individual is fortunate, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals the knowledge to him. It's a process of revelation. And only an individual that has that attitude can really feel secure. I mean, it sounds crazy because that's exactly the height of insecurity, but that's the only secure position for man in terms of Chachma. And that's what he told Paro. In other words, if a person feels that he is the one that can do it, ipso facto, he is tremendously, tremendously limited because he doesn't have an idea of what Chachma really is. And Chachma means the great Chacham realizes that he's subordinating himself before a world of knowledge. And if he's fortunate, then it'll be revealed to him. And if he's not, no matter how smart he is, he's simply not going to be able to attain the knowledge. That's Biladai. And if a person doesn't have that attitude, then he is in a negative position. In other words, he cannot really attain knowledge. That's what the Chazal say. Chazal say that Chachma is only given over to an Anav. Only to an Anav. Only an Anav. A person is a Balgaiva, can't be a Chacham. A Balgaiva is the opposite. The fact that the person is a Balgaiva and that he has an attitude that the Chachma is him, that itself precludes him from seeing ideas in areas that are extremely important, especially metaphysical areas. Metaphysical areas depend totally on the person's perfection and the person's recognition and knowledge of what they are, you see, in reality. And if the person does not know, if a person is misguided in that area, then he can never really attain knowledge in those areas. He can be a great mathematician, but he'll never be a metaphysician. Impossible. So that's really what Yosef HaTzadik was telling Paro. Bilodoy, he said, in this area, he showed them that he was different than the Chatumim, because the Chatumim claimed that they have powers. That's what they want to do. Because how do they find favor in the eyes of the king? They have special powers that nobody else has. And Yosef, no, it's just the opposite. It's the person that recognizes that he is nothing, that he stands before a world of Chochmas Elokim. And if he's fortunate, and if he's not swayed by his emotions and by his gaiva and by his other kind of instinctual forces, and he can just place himself totally in the correct framework where he simply perceives Chochmas Elokim, which makes him the greatest Anov, then he has a chance of arriving at the truth. But if he doesn't, then if he has the opposite mental framework, then he's doomed to fail. And basically, what like Ramban says, that Yosef, because Yosef said, "Va'ata yera paro ish nevel mechacham," v'ishisayel as Mizraim. And then what did Paro say? He says, "Achrei haralikim aschachol zas ain nevel mechacham kamocha." It's the exact same thing. So Ramban says, of course, he was being political, and he was setting him up. I mean, he was a tremendous chacham, and he knew exactly what to say to him, and he knew that Paro is going to say that, "You're right, we need a nishnav chacham, you're here." So he was manipulating Paro in his presentation. So he was also showing Paro true ideas, of course, but he was also knocking out the chatumim. Because it's showing that the Chatumim are the ones that claim they have the powers. And he says, no such thing. Bilodoy, the only one that has any power, if you want to consider a power, it's a person who places himself in the proper place, he has the proper attitude towards knowledge and towards Chochmas Elokim, then he's in a position to perceive, if he's fortunate. Elokim Yana Ashlam Para, then God can reveal to him. He could be in a position where God can reveal to him Chachma. But it's interesting, when we say God reveals Chachma, it doesn't really necessarily mean Nevoa. What do you have a pasuk to tell him? Gal einai v'abitan aflos mitarasecha. So it means we look at every piece of knowledge as a revelation, a process of revelation. It's gal einai v'abitan aflos mitarasecha means that the person has the proper attitude when he approaches a sugya, when he approaches whatever the sugya may be. I mean, whether it's a davar katan or davar gadol, wherever area it is, the approach is that approach. The approach where he recognizes there's an infinite world of Chochmas Elokim, and he recognizes that his mental apparatus is basically insignificant in the face of what exists in terms of Chochma. And if he has that attitude, then he's in a position that Chachma could be revealed to him. But we always consider Chachma as a receiving of a revelation, not as an act of mastery over a subject. It's an interesting thing. That the attitude of mastery over a subject is exactly the opposite of our attitude towards Chachma. And that's basically what Yosef HaTzadik was telling Paro. That's what he told him. So basically it was a correct thing to tell him. But it also was, like the Ramban says, it was also had another purpose, and that was to remove Paro from the Chatumim. Because with one sweep, he showed him that their approach is completely, they're destined to failure with their attitude. That attitude is destined to failure. You need a whole different attitude here, you see. And he had, of course, he had powerful forces on his side, because he knew that his interpretation of the dream is going to find satisfaction in Paro, because he knew he solved the riddle, the dilemma, the problem. What was the problem? The problem was to show the interpretation of Paro's dream and to satisfy Paro's megalomaniac instincts and desires and needs, and yet not place him in a situation where it was a hopeless tragedy. He knew that. So he knew he had him. And if you want to see what the Chatum are, it exists today. You don't have to go back to Mitzrayim. It's all around today. All these people They give these predictions. These are today's chatumim. Exact same thing. There's no difference whatsoever. The fortune tellers, the tellers of the future, the ones the people call up, advertise on television, people call them up, and you know, exact same thing. No, that's how they work. They work because they're imaginative. They could sense people's unconscious strivings and what's their symbolic world, and they hook in, and the people get very excited. You know, and they, what do they do when they make mistakes? Anti-verse all make mistakes, because it was this way and that way, and it was 15,000 years. Okay? They know how to do it. It's an art. It's an art, and it's also a chokhma in the sense that they know what they're dealing with and how to manipulate and how logically to place themselves in a very desirable position. I mean, they're not stupid. I mean, they know how to play with people's emotions. They're not just people that go into trances. I mean, they know what they're doing. Yes. If you take a look. Yes.
If you say the dreams tapped into reality, then that was something that the Chachamim never dealt with before, so they couldn't interpret it properly.
What do you mean?
But if this dream tapped into reality, as opposed to a person just having their fantasies, where people can be bothered by fantasies also, can't they?
Yeah, people can bother fantasies, yeah.
What's that?
Yes.
So as far as the Chachamim were relating to it, the Yeh framework, it was just something that was in his mind.
So
from something that was just in his mind, they couldn't have possibly interpreted it properly.
I mean, it's an important principle in Yehadis. And that's why Chazal say that Eina Torah Miskayim Elabami only the person that's an olav. It says Haikol Tzamil Lachula Mayim. Mayim goes from Makam Gavola Makam Namach. It means to say that basically the person cannot really, he's intelligent, he's a genius. Maybe a genius, and maybe the most highest IQ, but the fact is he's never going to really make any serious discoveries. Any really important ideas, especially in the world of metaphysics, is totally impossible, because all his emotions are driving him. He's not driven by reality. And the only person that really the only one who can gain knowledge is the person who has the proper attitude about his knowledge, and that means the person realizes where he is vis-a-vis knowledge and what knowledge is. Only a person of that nature can really make headway in progress, and that demands, if he understands it, he sees that basically he's nothing. Okay, and therefore every time a person has an idea, the idea is really considered a gilui. It's an interesting thing. It's considered a gilui. That's the way we look at Chachma. Kadosh Baruch Hu is megala. Not that the person mastered it. Mastery does not go very far. Mastery may work in a few mathematical computations, but it will never work in uncovering ideas. Okay. Yes. So there's one more aspect of a dream that we didn't discuss, which Chazal point out, which is important. And that is, Chazal seem to give a tremendous amount of value to the Pisron HaChalom. And that's the Gemara Brachas lot, the Pisron HaChalom. That the Ish Kifisron HaChalom HaChalomnu, Vayikasha Posalanu Kein Hoya. So Chazal underline these psukim, and they come with a general principle, HaKol HaLech HaChar Pisron. And that at first sight would seem to be problematic. I mean, what do you mean? So on the contrary, here Chazal seem to be adopting a totally rationalistic view about dreams, and they basically seem to be saying that dreams are nothing, and whatever it's all what you believe about the dream. That's what it means. Kol halachah person means it's not the dream; it's what you believe about the dream. So therefore, if you believe X about the dream, X will happen. If you believe Y about the dream, Y. So the dream is nothing. Basically, that's the case, and the dream is just a is just a worthless thing. Although Chazal say Hakola Holachachar Pisron, but they say, but that's only if the person gives the Pisron Me'ein HaChalom. All right, that's only if the Pisron is the main thing, but the Pisron's only good if it's Me'ein HaChalom. Okay, So, yeah. Call, yeah. So just to give a pisron is not going to help, but it has to be me'ein achalom. Okay, here you see like a strange combination. So basically, that's referring to the chalomos of the sarah mashkim and the sarah ofen, and over there as well, as we mentioned before. Over there as well, the chalom, the interpretation was based upon an insight into the individual's nature. Because in the Sar HaMashkim, what is he, in his dream, he sees himself going through the process. He's taking the, he goes to the orchard, he takes the anovim, and he squeezes them, and he puts them all kospa, he puts them all kafparo. You see, he has a desire to serve his master. So Yosef knew right away that this is he was a sincere individual. He saw from his dream that he was a sincere individual, and something happened. He was framed or whatever. He wound up in the Beis HaSoar. But the Sarah Ofim, on the contrary, in his dream, you see clearly, he doesn't even bother. There's no description of him baking the bread. It's just basically everything is ready baked. It wasn't one point of him being involved in the process. A person that's an eved enjoys the process of serving his master. Nothing. And then what happens? Para doesn't even get the food. The birds eat the food. So it showed totally that he had basically, he hated really serving Paro, and he wished that the even the efforts that he was involved in, which weren't much, I mean, it was so on his head, that power shouldn't get it, that the bird should get it, basically. So he saw that he was really a Russia. Now, what was the interpretation over there? How did he know about the 3 days? Okay, Vod Shlosh Yashamim. Where did he get that from? Okay. But the answer to that is simply because he knew that in 3 days it was the king's birthday. And what is the birthday? The concept of a birthday is where a person ascribes to himself cosmic importance. Because what does it mean? On this day, the sun was in this position when he was born. Okay, so what? So every birthday, or the idea of a birthday, is where the person ascribes cosmic importance to the self. And that's why in Yadis we don't have birthdays, we have Yahrzeit. So Yahrzeit is where you see what the person's life was. Birthday, okay? So but Paro was not the same philosophy, and to him his birthday had tremendous significance, cosmic importance. That's why, how did he spend his birthday? He spent his birthday judging people. After all, I mean, he's the Melech Olam. So the day of the cosmic importance is the day that he shows that he acts out his most significant role, which is a melech. And he decides, mi yichya mi yamos, basically. So they knew, and Yosef knew that in 3 days, there's going to be a day of judgment. So Yosef knew that they were new about that, and he knew that they were concerned about that, and they were worried, and no doubt that was really what was the material, the basis for the dream. You see, for them to have that dream. Because he knew what was going on in their minds the day before. And like the Pasuk says in Daniel, Rayonos Levovchal Mishkevech Olo. That a dream is basically what a person is Mahar Biyom. The Rayonayom is transferred into a dream. So he understood that. And he saw that they are going to come before Paro for judgment, that that they knew they're going to go before him for judgment, and he knew one thing. Now you see, he knew one thing. He knew that, and this is what Chazal mean. When Chazal say Hakol Holach Achar Pisron, it means like this, and that's why apparently the Sar Mashkim understood something of that, because it said Ish Kifisron Chalom Kol Chalom. So apparently he learned something from Yosef's interpretation. What did he learn? I call Hol Chacha Pisron. It means like this. It means that a person can determine their fate by the way they see themselves. In other words, you could be totally innocent, but if you feel guilty, you see, and you present yourself in a guilty manner, so you can seal your own destiny, and vice versa. If you are guilty, but you present yourself in an innocent fashion, so then you can be successful. Now, what happened was that once he gave the pisron to the Sahar Mashkim, so Sahar Mashkim, because of the pisron, he was really innocent, and he had confidence. So when he went before the Melech, he was exonerated, you see. But the Sarah Ofim was really guilty, and when Yosef gave him that interpretation, the interpretation basically sealed his fate. Because then he knew he was doomed, and when he appeared before the Melech, he was nervous, he was guilty, and people read other people's mannerisms, and they can determine and sense. I mean, that's especially a Melech. How does he make his decisions? He makes a decision, he looks at the person, he senses something funny, something wrong, so his fate is sealed. So basically, that's what it means. Ish kefisron chalam chalam. And that's what Chazal says. Chazal say, kol olachacha pisron. What they're saying is that more important than the dream, you see, more important than the dream is the way the person looks at the dream. But it has to be mein chelma. Why mein chelma? Because if the person doesn't sense any reality to it, it's not going to help him. I mean, just going to give him a pisron and tell him, walk home, things are going to be good. Cause but he has no hook, really, on which to attach that emotion. The dream serves as a hook because he senses emotionally a certain reality, and the fisron fits in perfectly. So then this affects his personality. Once he's locked in with the fact that it's part of his underlying psychological makeup and the reality too, then he's in a position for the dream to really to be effective. You see. And that's why, basically, that's what the pasuk says. Ish kefisron chalomo chalomnu. It means to say that their fates were sealed by the interpretation as much as by the dream. See, the dream was raw material, but the interpretation on top of it, that really fixed them. Okay, so that's how Yosef knew the interpretation of the dream. Basically, what Chazal is saying when they say Hakol Olachacha Pisron, I want you to understand, when Chazal say Hakol, it does not mean literally Hakol. You have to understand. Like what he was going to say, Chazal saying, Meir says, now what's the purpose of Nida? Because Nida is always a whole, why did the Kadosh Baruch Hu give us the din of Nida? Because Nida is always like a new chasna. Yeah, it's true. It's a benefit. It's a benefit for the relationship, but that's not the reason. I mean, the reason is it's part of Sefer Kedusha. Okay, I mean it's a more of a reason than that. It's not simply that God wanted us always to have a new honeymoon every month. I mean, that's the purpose of a human existence. When Chazal used that expression, it means it's a factor. Even though they express it in terms of in universal terms, you have to know that it just happens to be the way Chazal expressed themselves. So when Chazal say Hakol Holachacha Pisron, that's not the sum of the dream. Right? They're just saying it's an extremely important element. It's one of the major elements in a dream. The fact that if a person has a dream and someone interprets it, there's a tremendous lock on the personality. When that happens, there's a lock on the person's locked into a certain frame of mind, which will be predictive, because that's going to really seal the person's fate, the way they view it. Okay, that's it. Hakol Olachacha Pisron. Hakol Olachacha. The reason why they use that expression of Hakol Olachacha Pisron is because they're showing you it has tremendous significance. That's what they're telling you. It's everything. When he says everything, I mean, this has tremendous significance in terms of dream. Doesn't mean it's the only thing in a dream. I mean, they're emphasizing the fact that it has tremendous significance. When Chazal want to point out something that has a lot of significance, they use that expression. Doesn't necessarily mean it's the only thing. I just want you to be aware of that. Okay, so that's the second aspect of the dream that Chazal understood. You see, in terms of how Yadis views dreams. Okay, we'll stop here. Zmar Bayom, that's what he thinks about Balayla. And that, and that there's a in order to interpret chalomos, you require chachma, require wisdom and knowledge. And there's a pasuk really, Henoch Bol pointed out to me, the pasuk really which is explained very well according to this, according to our interpretation. Because it says that when Yosef was in prison with the Sa'am Mashkim and the Sarah Ofim, so it says that when they had the dream, they were depressed. And then it says, why do you look so depressed today? So he said to him, we dreamt the dream and there's no one that can interpret it. Vayomer aleihem Yosef. So Yosef said to them, Alo lelokim tisronim, sapun ale. A strange pasuk. I mean, the pasuk just doesn't make any sense in the pshuta shel mikra. That's the ordinary interpretation. Because he said they were disturbed. So he said to them, let me hear the. He wanted them to tell him the dream. So he said, Halo lelokim tisronim. Interpretations are from God. Sapru no li, tell me. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. The pasuk doesn't make any sense. On the contrary, if it's a little akin to Sronim, so then why should they tell him? There's a contradiction. Yeah, but I think that this the answer to this question really answers another question that the Ramban raises, because Ramban says. Before it says, "Vayiten chotu maskei melach Mitzrayim va'ofam." It says, "Vayiten osam b'mishma beisar atabochem el beisar saor mekom asher Yosef oser sham." So he placed the sar mashkin, the sar ofim, in the same place as Yosef. "Vayifkot sar atabochem as Yosef itom vayisharas osam vayiyom b'mishma." So the pasuk makes it very clear that they were there for a time in the mishma. Rashi is a year. So they were there a year in the Mishmar, and he was serving them. Then it says Vayachamu Chalom Shneim. So then it says again Vayishal Esrise Para Asher Ito B'Mishmar Beis Adon of Lema. I mean, it just said already that they were together in the prison. So why did it have to repeat it? Vayishal Esrise Para Asher Ito B'Mishmar Beis Adon of Lema. So Ramban asked the question. So according to our interpretation, there's one answer to both questions really. What it means is like this, that the pasuk is telling you that Yosef was there for 12 months in the Mishmar, and Yosef knew them, and he conversed with them, and they knew him as well. So obviously, what did he discuss with them? He discussed with them his Ashkafas Olam, the way he understood life. So he obviously explained to them that his God is the God that is the source of all Chachma, and that man has a Tzelem Elokim, and through the Tzelem Elokim, he's able to perceive some of God's Chachma. You see, that's his whole Ashkafa. So that's why you have that pasuk. The preceding pasuk explains the second pasuk. When he said Alo lelokim tisronim tsapun ali, was really his philosophy, his Ashkafa, his Ashkafa Zola, his understanding of how things work. In other words, Alo lelokim tisronim means that really a tisron is based on Chochmas Elokim, Elokim Pesronim, Sapin Ali, because a person has a Tzelem Elokim, and maybe I'll be able to comprehend and to understand what the Chalom is about. So basically, Alo Elokim Pesronim, Sapin Ali was really his philosophy. And that's why the Pasuk says, Vayidaber, Vayishos Visvashar Ito B'Mishma Beis Adon Avlema. There was the only reason that he was able to approach them was because he was with them already for 12 months, And he already, they knew what his way of thinking was, and therefore he was able to say that to them. He was able to say, "Alo l'kim pesronim." It means that a dream is chachmas Hashem. Sapur Ali, a person has a tzelem alakim, with chachma he can unravel it. So that really explains the pasuk. Again, it shows the pasuk pshuto kamashmo shows the idea of where Yosef approached the dream. Yeah. Asfana says Apshat, and Radak also says Apshat. The Ramban gives a different answer. So Ramban says that it showed that he had confidence in his chokhmah. It's not a type of the sas what the Ramban is saying to what we're saying. But had confidence in his chokhmah, but I think he can add a little more to it, namely that they were with him together, and what did he discuss with them for 12 months? He obviously discussed with them the way he understood life, what his idea of God is, and what his idea of man is, the basics of the basic hashkafa, his basic understanding of life. And that's why he said, "Alo l'kim pesronim and Ali." They understood what he meant when he said that. It was based upon their understanding of how he thought. So the pasuk fits in very nicely. Yeah. There was one question that we had, which had to do with the contradiction that Chazal mentioned, and that we know from our understanding of Yehadus, that from Pesukim of the Torah, that sometimes a chalom is a vehicle basically of nonsense. Rayonos libcha mishkevecha alum. So that sometimes is just a vehicle of nonsense. On the other hand, the pasuk says b'chalom elavas vado. That's what the Gemara says. Sometimes when there was Shmuel, I think, said that good dream, he said b'chalom elavas vado. Bad dream, that the chalom is a shav, that the chalom is shavi daber, that chalom is just nonsense. So in Yehadus, we have this ambivalent kind of understanding. Approach to a dream. On the one hand, it's the greatest chokhmah. On the other hand, it's the lowest part of man. Okay, lowest part of man. The part that's disturbing him during the daytime. He's things that he's obsessed with during the daytime are expressed in his imagination at nighttime. Okay. Yeah. So why this? How does this dichotomy? I mean, it seems like two mutually exclusive ways of looking at a dream. I mean, only Yehadus has that looks at a dream in two opposite ways. One way is really in line with the modern idea of dreams, that a dream is a result of a person's inner thoughts, a lot of thoughts that he doesn't even want to realize himself. That break loose during the dream process. That's correct. But on the other hand, Yehadus also maintains that a dream is a vehicle of the highest chachma. Yeah. I think the answer is really based on the way Yehadus looks at a person. That man basically according to Yehadus. Is a combination. It's a combination. He has two elements that are in opposition to each other. On the one hand, he has the Tzelem Elokim, and on the other hand, he really is Kiyetze Lev Adam Ramin Urav. That man is an instinctual, thoroughly instinctual creature. So you have two opposite forces in man. You can't find man is not a unified entity, and the process, you see, in the waking state there are two things happen. One is that the instinctual becomes operative. Instinctual becomes operative in the waking state. So the instinctual is really more powerful in the waking state than in the state of sleep and dreams. That's what people know. That people are the most, even if a person has the most powerful dream, he knows, well, it's only a dream. It's only a dream means that the instinctual part of man will not really gain satisfaction from this, because the instinctual process is not really working, is not attached to reality. So it doesn't have the strength that it has when the person is awake. When the person is awake, the instincts attach themselves to something that's real. So the instinctual is operating in a powerful way, in its most powerful way possible. Okay, in the dream, on the other hand, it's the instinctual is mitigated, because it's just imagination. It's just working in imagination. It's only a dream. It's nothing. So that's one aspect of dreams. Yep. On the other hand, when a person is in the waking state, so then the waking state is also a state in which a person can perceive knowledge. How does a person perceive knowledge? Person in this existence perceives knowledge through the senses. And because a person perceives knowledge through the senses, because the soul is tied to the physical, in other words, because the mind is tied to the brain, so it has an inherent limitation. That's what the pasuk says. When Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Arei nos kodecha," so God said, "Lo yirani ha'odam v'choy." Okay, as long as he is alive in the physical. In the physical form, and his soul is limited by the function of the physical. All his knowledge has to be attained through the senses, so he has an inherent limitation. So the waking state, it's an interesting thing, but the waking state is the most powerful state insofar as the instinctual is concerned, but insofar as the tzelem elokim of man, the waking state detracts from his intellectual faculty, from his ability to perceive totally the abstract world, because he has to go from the concrete to the abstract. Everything he gains is through the senses, mainly through the sense of vision. So therefore, the waking state is weaker in man than the ultimate state, where knowledge can be perceived totally through the abstract. That's really the way Yadus looks at man. Therefore, as a natural result, what happens is that in the state of sleep, where the person is not awake, so knowledge which he would obtain during that state, If he were to attain knowledge, it would, in essence, bypass the senses. In other words, this knowledge would not come via the senses. So in that sense, because of that, the knowledge is greater. Because the knowledge does not have to go through the medium of the senses. And that's really what Nevuah is. Nevuah is when man is able, see, man in the waking state, man is able to key in to a whole world that's not physical through his mind. So he can tune into that world. That's the tzelem elokim. But it has to go through the senses. But in Nevuah, what happens is Nevuah is one level higher, because he attains knowledge directly and it bypasses the senses. Where does it register? It registers in the same faculty that the sense perception registers on, which is the imaginative faculty. We call it the imaginative faculty, not to be confused with imagination, okay? Which means to say, when a person sees something, his eye sees something, so it registers, the image registers in the brain. So there's a faculty through which the senses pick up information, and then it registers it in a certain part of the mind, and then the mind can work on it. In the Nevuah, where it's bachalom elav ezvada, so the senses are bypassed. And that's why the knowledge is naturally of a superior nature. Okay? You see, that's the way the Ram describes Nevua in Hilchos Yisori HaTorah. So he says, Perek Shvi Alach HaBeis, Hanaviyim Mailois Mailois, different levels of Nevua. Kmo Sheyesh B'Chochma Chochma Gadol Mechaveroi, different levels of Chochma. Kain B'Nevua, Navi Gadol Me Navi. One Navi is greater than another Navi. Then he says, V'kulon Ein Roen Mara Nevua Ela B'Chalom, B'Chazoyon Laila. O Bayom, Acha Shetipo Aleim Tardema. After a deep sleep falls upon them. Kmo Shenema, B'Mara Elov Ezvado, B'Chalom Adabrabo. And then the Ram describes it. V'kulon K'shem Esnabim, Evorein Mizdazin, their limbs shake, the koach haguf koshel, and the physical part of the body, the strength of the body is weak. The eshtinoseim mistarfos, eshtinoseim means their desires, they're driving. Bayom huavdu eshtinosov means what a person desires, the normal things that a person strives for. They're striving, so to speak, on mistarfos or uprooted. The kishoher hadas pinuya, and the mind remains free lahovin mashetera. Okay, so what is Ram describing? It's the ultimate intellectual state. So sleep, you see, sleep has an advantage that the two things. First, it doesn't the knowledge bypasses the senses, but it's more than the knowledge bypassing the senses. It's really what I was saying before. That the instinctual is not in gear anymore. Because in the waking state, the instinctual is in its most powerful form. Okay? So, in the waking state, the instinctual attaches itself to reality. And because of that, it's in its most powerful, in the most powerful form possible. So, in that's what the Rambam says, the koach haguf is lowered, And what happens is that the das remains pinuyo, which means to say that the person is based on it. It's based on the same idea kolayanir machoi, which means that as long as the instinctual is there, so then man is not capable of abstract comprehension. Okay. So, therefore, what happens is, during the state of sleep, the advantage is that the instinctual is not in gear. That's what Ram says, the koch haguf is, what's the lashon of koch haguf? Kashal. Yeah, it becomes weak. That's why the only one, that's the mile of Moshe Rabbeinu, was the only one that didn't have to have that reduction. Didn't require that reduction. That even when he was awake, all his energies could be directed towards Chachmas Hashem. But every other Navi is not capable of that. So he has to get out of gear, out of the instinctual gear. You see. So that's why, and during sleep, the imaginative faculty is still functioning well. So the knowledge comes to him, it bypasses the senses and comes to him directly, registers directly on the imaginative faculty. You see, registers directly. So that's why the state of sleep for the Navi is the highest state possible, see, in this existence. That's why Bachalom Elov Asvada. On the other hand, that is only when the influence of God's Chachma works on the individual. But an ordinary person when he's sleeping. So on the contrary, what happens is the instinctual is attached to the imaginative. And then on the contrary, what happens is that the most nonsensical formulations take place. Because there is no reality testing for the instinctual. So therefore, that's why dreams according to Yadis can be two opposite. Completely opposite kind of phenomena. Completely opposite. On the one hand, it's a vehicle of can be in the perfected individual a vehicle of the highest level of perception of abstract thought of chachma. But on the other hand, if he's not under the influence of chachma, So then it becomes a vehicle of shtus, nonsense, because the instinctual doesn't have the ability to test things in reality, and just all this is, everything becomes possible because the imaginative faculty is available, but it's not controlled by reality. So then, on the contrary, then it becomes a vehicle of expression of the craziest ideas. That which is impossible in the daytime becomes possible at nighttime when he's sleeping. There's no logic and there's no rules. So Yehadis maintains, according to Yehadis, dreams really have to be viewed in two opposite ways. It could be a vehicle of the highest chachma, and it could be a vehicle of the greatest shtus. Yes. But what Yehadis maintains is that even the craziness of a dream still works with chachma. You can still discover what the the primitive people believe that a dream is some kind of primitive force taking over, and it's that Yehadis denies. That's halola lekim pesronim sapron ali. This is the Tzelem Elokim can unravel and can explain everything in a dream. It'll explain how the shtus works, you see. But it could also detect that part of the dream which is prophetic as well. Now, one second. The thing is like this. There are two types of prophetic dreams. This seems to be clear from the Torah. Two types of prophetic dreams. One type of prophetic dreams, like the Rambam says, Bachalome Eilov Azvada. Bachalome Eilov Azvada, and it's only for a chacham, of course. I mean, it can only be for a chacham. It means you have to understand that, you see, it's based on the idea I mentioned last time. I said that for us, all knowledge is really a gilui. Is really a gilui. Okay? The Rambam explains that. When a person perceives chachmas elokim, it's not an ordinary experience. It means that that's really what Daniel says. What Daniel says, that God gives chachma to the chachamim. It's a pasuk in Daniel. God gives chachma to the chacham. What does it mean? It means there is a certain amount of chachma that a person attains through the natural course of using his mind. He learns methodology, and he learns how to think, and he understands what chachma is. But insights in particular insights and particular knowledge take place through a different process of gilui. Okay, we could also say, gal einai v'abita neflos mitarasecha. The dream, the bamara elov esvada, is a continuation of that process. It's a continuation. That's why it can only happen to a chacham. You see, that's what the Rambam mentions later, that those who are mevachim lehinove, Risnave. Okay? He says, call him in Snav Machol Ashir, so Machavnin Daitom the Yoshim Smechim the Tove Levum is boded him. Shaina Navu Ashora Lomitoch Atfus Lomitoch Atlus Onitoch Simcha. Leficho, Benea Navim Lefneam Navel the Sofa Cholu Vikino Vahima Vakshim Anavua. Vizeo Shinema Vahima Misnabim. Kloma Mahalchim Bedera Hanavua Chinabu Kmosha At Omer Ploni Misgadel. So it means it's a continuation. It's a continuation of the process of perceiving Chochmas Elokim. See, the mind can be trained. That's a natural phenomenon, that the mind is trained. That's a matter of a person putting in enough effort and study and understanding to know how to think and to become clear in logic and methodology. That's a natural process. But particular insights are really through a different process. It's through a process of viewing. Ram tells Anamar Nevuah what that process is. Okay, but Nevuah is simply, Nevuah is an extension of that process. It means where the person is in tune is with Chochmas Elokim, so then he receives the Chochma in the waking state through an ordinary process, but he can, if he's on a very high level, all his energies could be directed to Chochmas Elokim, and then he could receive it through Nevuah. But it's a continuation of the process. That's why Yehadis maintains, is one of the reasons Yehadis maintains, that real chokhmah can only exist in a perfected individual. In a person that's what the Rambam and the Maravuchim has. People that have bad traits, that are not perfected, in terms of midos, so they may be big chachamim in terms of the brain power, but particular insights into chokhmah selokim, metaphysical insights, they'll never be able to attain. Blocked. It's blocked. It could be the most powerful mind, but it's blocked. That is only through a process of gilui, even in the waking state. But this gilui finds its greatest expression in the sleeping state, b'mara elav asvada. Okay? It means that man has a receiver, so to speak. He can receive chokhmas elokim. That's the pasuk in Daniel. It's a pasuk in Daniel. Yeah. So the pasuk in Daniel is in Daniel Beis Chafalef. So he's speaking about the shvacha shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, shvacha shel Makom, and he says Yoiv Chochmaso Lachakimin Umando LiYodei Vina. So what does it mean? I mean, if they're chacham already, so what does he have to give them chachma for? But the answer is, the chachamim, the first, mandol yodevino. It means like this. It means that the natural process of attaining knowledge is a prerequisite. In other words, that you have to have first. But once the person attains it, then particular knowledge, certain knowledge, metaphysical knowledge, is attained through a process of giving. That's what the possibility. Yes. You mean to say it's possible, it's subject to variation of degree. Correct? Right?
I don't know if I'm saying more or less, but
now, hold on a second. Okay. So really essentially where we're at right now, I mean what we have right now is the basic fundamental principle of what Nevu is and Bachalom Elovas Vada. There's no question about it. The thing that we have to understand is what is a chalom, like the chalom paro, or the chalom Nebuchadnezzar, or the chalom of the Sarah Mashkim and the chalom of the Sarah Ofer. Yeah, that's correct. These were not great chachamim. I mean, paro was obviously he wasn't a fool, but he wasn't a chacham in our sense. Okay, so. So over there, yes. Yeah, Bilam's nevuah. I explained that Bilam. See the difference. The difference between Danny mentioned it before. The difference between Bilam's nevuah and between Paro's nevuah is as follows. See, there are two types of nevuah. One type of nevuah is essential nevuah, where the person is deserving of the perception, a natural process, and the Rambam says that sometimes the Chacham gets Nevuah just to be Machav Daito, just to give him more metaphysical knowledge. It has nothing to do with telling anybody anything, just personal insight that he gains through the process of Nevuah. Okay? Yeah, that's essential Nevuah. But sometimes what happens is that a person comes under the influence of God's chachma accidentally, for a specific reason, like Bilam or like Lavan Arami, okay, and that is because there's a reason for it, and obviously that's the same thing where the Ashgacha makes use of a certain individual. There the individual is not functioning as a gaver, but he's functioning as a cheftza. It's just a means. But the difference between Bilam and Paro is that Bilam was a unique individual. See, Bilam really had the kalim. He had the ability. When he perceived the Nevuah, he understood it 100%, and his essence really partook of the Nevuah. But the only thing was that he had all the kalim, he had all the abilities, but it was a rusher because his instinctual overpowered him. But he had the abilities. He was a unique individual. That's really why Bilam really was able to perceive Nevuah And you see, from the way the Torah describes his nevuahs, really, it means he understood the deepest thoughts, because he had the capacity and he had the ability and he really had the chachma. But the only thing was that in his waking state, the emotions overpowered him. And the only reason, that's what I mentioned before, that God does not, Yoev Chachma Salah Chachamim, means God doesn't reveal if a person is not in a state of perfection, God, it's a barrier. He'll never be able to get certain insight. Philim was an exception. He was a person that had the intellectual faculty perfected, but because he was a Rasha, he was barred from certain insights. But because of Klal Yisrael, he was given the insights. And at the time of the insights, you see the way he spoke, time of the insights, he was really saw the truth. And he was overpowered by the truth. But it wasn't because of his own Bechira that he attained that state. It was only because of it was necessary for Klal Yisrael that he should have this Nevuah. But Paro was different. Paro wasn't on that level. Paro was not described as being on the level of Bilam, where he had the capacity. With him, the Nevuah, the prophetic aspect of the dream, was simply because of the Ashgacha. So, and the same thing with Sarmashkin Sarov. Now when Yosef, that's why when Yosef interpreted the dream as a rational line of interpretation, but there was also a prophetic element there. And that Yosef was able to perceive. Yosef knew how to interpret the dream both from a rational aspect. He knew how to interpret the dream and to see which elements are just nonsensical and which elements were unusual and can only be explained as being prophetic. See, that was the chachma of Yosef. He had both. So he was able to interpret the dream, and that's why the dream is interpreted on two levels. Basically, it's rational. Everything's rational, fits in with their personalities, but at the same time there's a prophetic element there, and he was able to detect and to explain the prophetic element. Yeah, but now the question is, let's go back to Yosef's dreams himself. the Chalom was Yosef himself. So these dreams, I mean, like I said, over there, Paro and the Sam Mashkim, Sarofim, and Nebuchadnezzar there was no Gavra involved. By Bilam, there was a Gavra. By Paro and the Sam Mashkim, it was just Petaras Chefza. I mean, they were just objects, vehicles. But by Yosef, the question is, by Yosef, what kind of dreams were Yosef's dreams? Were they just dreams of his own aspirations, which was certainly the way the brothers interpreted it, and it certainly was the way Yaakov Avinu, when he reprimanded him, interpreted it, because he said, "Ma chalom azeh asher chalomta, avon avon ivim chavachech l'shtachos v'charotza." This is just an egotistical dream. What are you saying? So you see the way Yaakov looked at it, he criticized them, and he interpreted it, at least ostensibly, he interpreted it the same way as the brothers did. Okay, it's Vav Shamas Adava. He thought there was something more there. And maybe there is some truth to the dream. So I kept it in the back of my mind, but he wasn't sure. Because you see, when they brought the coat, Yosef's tzonis pasim, so that's it. He said Torah, Torah, Yosef. So apparently, he at that point he thought the dreams were just nonsensical, egotistical dreams. But what I would like to focus on is precisely that Yaakov understood the dreams of Yosef. I think there's something more important here. Because in understanding the dreams of Yosef, the question is, what kind of dreams were these? Were these just egotistical dreams?